All viewers are advised to turn off their televisions immediately.
The broadcast will commence after the following tone.
This is the Extra Hot Grade Podcast, episode 3 for the week of September 2nd, 2013. I am bewigged clone David T. Cole, and I'm here with Number Wang, Joe Reed.
Six.
Texting Moriarty, Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm going to kill you anyway, someday.
Gleeful psychopath Tara Ariano.
John Luther is my friend. Hello.
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 Hi.
Hello.
Govna.
So, in honor of Luther, which is airing its entire third series this week on BBC America, in one episode every day format starting today, which makes me think the fact that they're burning it off this quickly... Do they know that people have already maybe watched it through methods?
There's that. I don't think that's a giant chunk of the, you know, viewing populace, mm-hmm. but it didn't do so well in the UK, this series.
Well, that was going to be my question. Not only do they know that people watch it through methods, but do they know that those people were not impressed with it so much?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was still good TV, but it didn't stack up to series one and two until sort of the last episode of the series. I mean, it's still worth watching, but something seemed to me, and now I have promoted my view to other people that said they liked it just fine and now it's a crackpot, but I thought it fell short of previous ones.
Who did not agree with you, Dave? Name their names.
I honestly forget. I would if I remember, but I do remember talking to two people. If I remember, I'm going to call you out by the end of the episode.
Okay, so last week, Adam Sternberg, friend of the show, tweeted something to the effect that he is still waiting for, although he likes The Bridge, okay, FX is The Bridge, he's still waiting for a stylish, funny, weird police procedural that he can really sink his teeth into. Mm-hmm. And to me, Luther is that. Even the third series that was not so great, I still think it fits all of those categories. What do we think?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I would say the third series wasn't bad. I just thought it was disjointed. That was my problem with it.
Right.
And Luther tends to take on a weird kind of cadence to their series where it's four episodes, but it's usually two cases. So there's like a first half and a second half, even in a very short series.
Yeah.
And this season, it didn't work so well, I thought. And I thought, like, sort of the underlying drive to the series, it was sort of like this investigation into Luther, was really sort of meh. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't really have any energy to it.
Yeah.
But I think as the series as a whole, Luther is sort of the more kind of batshit insane police shows out there, discounting the original Bridge, I would say, is mm-hmm. the only one that I would put above it.
Yeah.
I think that's a good bet, if that's his criteria.
What do we think on the East Coast?
I think that he could do... Has he not seen any of Luther? Or he has only not seen the third series?
He did not specify if he's seen any of it. That was just one of my recommendations.
I actually gave up the show early in the second series. I don't recall why. I think there was just something about it that was not... I don't know. That something was taking me out of it. Mm-hmm. I was unable to suspend my disbelief for some reason. But the first series I thought was amazing, and Ruth Wilson is great. And I think I am the crackpot in this instance. So, yeah, I think that he could do well with that. He might also try Broadchurch, but it might not be weird enough.
Well, let's talk about Broadchurch because you've been watching it.
Before we get into that, I have a guess into what took you out of it, Sarah. Was it the, and this is a little bit of a spoiler, but was it the Dungeons and Dragons-esque plot line? With the twin brothers and all that jazz?
That could have been it.
Yeah, that sounds like...
that could have been it.
That sounds like Sarah D. Bunting, TV show boner side.
Yeah. No, that's Buntonite, yeah. Definitely. But I don't even remember that. I think it was something about Luther, like the story with his wife or something like that, that I was like, I'm supposed to care about this in a way that I don't.
Yeah.
But I don't remember exactly what it was. I would not be against jumping back into it to see, because I liked Ruth Wilson. But Broadchurch is another one that I think it probably shouldn't work for me. There are certain, you know, it's a murder in a very small town. And the two detectives on the case, one of them is from the town and knows everyone. And the other one, played by David Tennant, is sort of this like Gregory House PD weirdo who's fleeing a scandal in the big city. And there's a lot of like those cliches, but it's acted very well. They keep things moving. They're not giving away too much, but they're not holding things back for the sake of holding it back, which is one of the things I love about European TV generally, is that the story goes at the pace of the story.
Yes.
And not, it isn't like stretched or crunched to be 13 or 22 or whatever the episode order is. Mm-hmm. And the acting has been great. It's beautiful to look at. I know that's such a whatever sophomore in film school thing to say, but it's worth something.
Yeah.
PhD. And I'm really liking it so far, but it is a pretty, there's something to be said for a straight ahead procedural that's well built. It's, Joe and I were talking about it yesterday. It's the Michael Clayton principle.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
That a well put together film, like, yeah, it has all the accustomed parts, but putting them together properly and in a compelling way is actually harder than it looks.
Well, and it manages to be one of those set in a small town, and the fact that it's set in a small town is important, but they don't feel the need to like really aggressively quirk it up or like just, you know,
is there a giant dome
a log lady in every storefront or something like that?
Yeah, that's true. They don't condescend to the milieu.
Yeah,
I appreciate.
And yet Olivia Colman's character, a lot of her conflict with David Tennant is not just sort of temperament, although that's part of it, but in she is protective of her community, her small community, and she sort of bristles at him not understanding that. And I mean, I'm only two episodes in, so I'm assuming that it sort of moves on from here. But I think the way she behaves is sort of tells you a lot about the small town without it being very overt and very winky, which I like.
Yeah, and it doesn't act like people in a small town don't have the internet or exposure to a wider culture.
Yeah.
Some of them are unsophisticated and kind of trashy, but that's, I mean, you get that in a big city too. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. I would recommend that to any friend of the show. And it's not one of those, like, for example, Ripper Street, that it takes you a few episodes to realize that you thought the show was a lot better than it was because everyone has a British accent.
Yeah.
And then there's that show has that one American character where you're like, whenever he's talking, you're like, oh, this dialogue is actually pretty shite. And I just didn't realize it until someone who sounded like me was saying it, because there's something about that accent that just like classes it up. The Fall, same thing.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, I didn't really realize that this, I'd kind of seen this before in Prime Suspect done better, because everyone's, you know, Britting it up.
Yeah.
And you feel like you should like it more, and then you're like, oh, this is actually not that great.
Which one is Ripper Street? Is that, is
yeah,
it,
I was about
is
to ask that too.
One?
I'm like,
which one of the 17 Jack the Ripper possible scenarios is Ripper
Street? Yes, that's Matthew McFadden, Faden,
yes.
Fuden,
yes.
Foyden, as as one of the Ripper investigators who's now investigating other cases. And there are some other like ancillary characters from the Ripper case. But he also, you know, there's his like taking it personally backstory.
Right.
The whole weird thing with his wife. And that's what kind of killed my Ripper boner at the end, is that it really was becoming, he was like becoming this British 19th century stabler, and it's like, I can't with this, like, you know, less sulky, more solvy.
I have a name for that character. Constabler.
Not just Constabler.
Constabler.
I think I got Ripper Street mixed up with Whitechapel, which is another one that was like, it was on, I think we only watched the premiere, but it was like a supposedly contemporary, someone redoing all of Jack the Ripper's crimes. And I also mixed it up with Copper, which is the other British mystery cop.
That one I assumed was about a magician, because I'm an idiot.
Well, and there is a name generator aspect to this, right? Where it's like Broadchurch and Ripper Street and what'd you say? White Castle? What
White
is that?
White Castle.
This is what I mean, though. Like, there's
Jack
endless
and
possibilities.
Hooker go to White Castle. No. Whitechapel. Gotcha. Yeah, there was one that we watched that was only that was another 3-episode jobby that was just called The Town.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be confused with the Ben Affleck movie.
Right.
Yeah,
or The City
or
and
the
Frisky
Fall,
Dingo.
Or The Hour, or any of the other 4-letter nouns that they're really into.
Yeah.
Oh, except they're not that into The Hour because they canceled it, WTF.
I know.
Yes, I'm still mad.
Not over it. Yeah.
I gave The Hour a good shot. And
did you give it
this
an hour?
Is your fault? You didn't watch it all?
Apparently so. Apparently
Joe,
so.
A bitch.
And you
bailed out after 21 minutes, did you?
And you would think that the Ben Whishaw aspect would have kept me around. And it's not that I didn't like it. It's just, all right, here's where I admit that the same thing happened to me with Sherlock, where I, I know, I'm sorry.
Get out.
But, and it's not like I can't go back and revisit these things and maybe they will eventually like click. I have DVDs of both of them and they're sort of there for waiting for like a rain out weekend or something like that. Mm-hmm. But God, there's so much TV. There's so much TV, which is
it's cold in here.
But this is why I appreciate totally. Something like Orphan Black, where it's like Orphan Black, I am compelled to go running to the next episode. And I'm watching them on Netflix DVDs, so I'm sort of I have that kind of old school, like I've seen 4 episodes and now I cannot wait for the next 4 episodes to start.
Can I ask you something about Sherlock though? Because this is a phenomenon that I've observed.
Uh-huh.
Which did you watch them in order?
I watched the first one that was on the DVD.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. There goes my theory.
Why?
Well, a few people that I've spoken to who didn't care for it. I mean, some people just don't like Cumberbatch, which
I don't.
Okay.
Generally.
Well, there you go. That's the other grand unifying theory of Sherlock haters. But the other one is that they watched the episode with the woman first.
Oh.
I forget the name of the episode.
The second season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are like, ooh, I don't care for that. Yeah. Which I didn't either. That's my least favorite. So, okay, never mind. Moving on.
Yeah, nothing can beat the Reichenbach Fall. That series 2 finale is so good. Oh. I wish I could watch it again for the first time right now.
I know.
So what are our, if you had to give one recommendation for a British thing, either on BBC America or on Netflix, go.
I think I would still put in a vote for Utopia.
Yes. That's another Through Methods acquisition, although it's purportedly being remade, possibly with David Fincher involved, possibly for HBO.
Right. But check out the British one if you can. Seek it out through methods. it's really interesting. It on paper is the kind of thing that would be like, oh, that's too high concept and it's too like intentionally sort of geek bait.
Yeah.
It's the story of this sort of people that meet on an online forum and they're all into this same graphic novel that's really weird and apparently was like created by this guy in an asylum. But it turns out the graphic novel is sort of like the key to this big conspiracy that involves the government and, you know, the medical industry. And it just gets crazier and crazier and grander over a pretty short series, 6 episodes,
yep.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sort of like, it's one of those things, I think I talked about it on a mini or a podcast before, where it's sort of, it's our reality, but just slightly phased enough that it's exotic. And yeah. I really love shows that do that and sort of do it consciously, you know, where it's sort of like, we're 10% off kilter. And it's that 10% that really makes a big difference. And the characters are great. It's still like this small band of British youth. Mm-hmm. And just sort of like this one crazy Irish lady who comes into their lives and is sort of like the Sarah Connor of the Utopia universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't want to say too much about the plot because it's one of those shows like, you know what it is? It's sort of like what Lost, I wanted out of Lost.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is this mystery and it's a compelling mystery and it's something I want to know the answers to. And then they deliver, and it's satisfying, and I don't feel like I was the sucker for watching it.
Yes, but it still leaves the door open for it to.
Yeah, the story's not over,
more.
But
if that were the end, it would be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I never felt that way.
And there is a second season coming up.
Coming.
Yeah.
For me, it's hard to narrow down a contemporary British comedy series, especially given my love of Mitchell and Webb and that Mitchell and Webb look and Peep Show.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to give my vote to The Inbetweeners.
Yeah.
Which don't be prejudiced against it because of the terrible American remake that was swiftly canceled.
Wait, I was going to say, they did a British version of that MTV show because...
you didn't watch The Hour. Don't put your luck. The Inbetweeners, if I had to sum it up, is like Rushmore meets Superbad. So it's a group of four boys. They are teenagers. They are disgusting. And they
All four of them are disgusting.
Sometimes in the same way, sometimes in distinct and different ways.
Right.
And they get into disgusting situations. And if you watch the BBC America version, you should definitely seek out the uncut version on Hulu. I think it may also be on Netflix. Because the BBC America version really bowdlerized some key plot elements. But it's great. And they made a movie, I think last year it came out, and it was like in America.
And when you listen to the uncut version and all, like, you know, the British swears that are like just a little bit unfamiliar or a lot unfamiliar, sort of like reading like the X-rated version of The Professor and the Mad Men, you know, it's just like so many dirty words. Like, what the fuck does that mean? Oh, that is like the fact that I don't know what it means makes it 20 times more disgusting than it probably is, you know?
It's the word fanny, which is just so fanny for Americans, but yes. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, and minge. Anyway, yes. The fact that these are the words
there's so much minge mentioning in The Inbetweeners. I can't even.
Yes. So the movie is not as great as the show, but the movie is still pretty good.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's another one coming, but the movie is on Netflix streaming. So yes, The Inbetweeners.
Yeah. I feel like I should throw an emeritus mention out to Skins, which is still the first series of Skins, is still my favorite British import thing that I've ever seen. And that has a huge BBC America editing issue.
Oh, yeah.
So that's another one where, like, seek that out elsewhere. Like, I think, like, you can... I ended up downloading a bunch on iTunes, and they were fine. They were in the original version. And Skins is a show where the first series I loved so much, and I knew that after the first two series that they changed the cast, and I haven't gone into the second cast yet because I don't want it to ruin what I loved about the first two seasons.
Yeah.
It was that good.
Yep.
Right now I'm going to say it's Orphan Black. I think that's when I'm four episodes in, and it is, the mystery is sort of like vaguely sort of out there. It's the only really thing the show is moving towards. It's not like there's anything else in the show, but the interplay between all the characters is really, really strong. And it's the performance by Tatiana
Maslany.
I'm going to mispronounce her name, Maslany. Sure, yes. is as strong as everybody says it is. It's one of those things where, like, there was hype, and I was very wary going into it.
Yeah, we were too.
And then one episode, I was just like, oh, okay, like, I get it. Like,
and if you're only four episodes in, you're in for a treat, because I think it really picks up steam.
Oh, beautiful. Excellent.
Yeah.
Team Allison.
Yeah, Team Allison.
Present day, I would say go with Broadchurch. It's very well built and well acted, and so far it's Joe, keep going with it because it's starting to get really twisty and dense.
Yeah.
And my emeritus mention actually would be Prime Suspect.
Nice.
I think you can get them on Netflix streaming. I know you can get them on disc, and it's like Harry Potter, like, pre-union on some of these. Like, every British actor winds up on it. It's fantastic. You understand why Helen Mirren became, like, the doyen of everything.
Yeah.
She's amazing, even though her character is really often very annoying. And I would say Ripper Street, kind of a good Friday time shift show. I would fold laundry in front of it, but it's not appointment TV. And Law & Order UK, ixnay. Not worth it.
I have two more just quickly to button. If you if Broadchurch and The Fall have whet your appetite for British mystery shows, short season mystery shows, The Bletchley Circle, which is set in the 50s, right?
Yeah,
it involves three women who were code breakers in World War II, and then shit starts happening, and they get back together to try and solve this, find a murderer of women.
It's basically analog CSI.
It's so good,
sort of.
Fuck. It's,
you know,
so interesting.
With code breaking.
Okay. It's really good. It was on PBS, so it may still be streaming. But yeah, find that. And the other is one that we watched on HBO Go called 5 Days, right?
Oh, yeah.
With Hugh Bonneville and, this is for you, Joe, Janet Giant Hoots McTeer.
Oh, the Hoots is back.
Oh, I love Hoots.
The Hoots is on fire.
It's it's a little Broadchurchy in that it follows one crime and it sort of takes place in this a suburb of London, I guess, or whatever. But the gimmick of it, which is really interesting, is that each episode takes place on a different day of the investigation, and sometimes they're like 40 days apart. So it's sort of like you just check back in and see what's changed since the last one. It's really good. So HBO Go.
Going from one topic to another, an appropriate segue makes it smooth as butter.
So in the year or so in between podcast iterations, there were so many movies, you guys. So many movies. And now I can't really talk about movies primarily because we are TV focused, as we should be. But exception noted. And also, I don't know if you realize, but they show movies on TV these days.
What?
Yep. So HBO this Saturday is premiering reigning Best Picture Oscar winner Argo, which, if you were around at all last January, February, people had some opinions on about our friend Argo. Mm-hmm. It's one of those Oscar movies tend to really polarize the opinions, especially if they are in a position to win. And I think there was a lot of polarization around Argo in terms of, at the beginning, I think it got a little bit too much credit for being a solid movie that your mom and dad will pay money to go and see in the theater.
That's a perfect way to put it. Yeah.
And I think once it ended up winning Best Picture, it got a lot of over hate for being fairly middle brow, fairly modest in terms of its ambitions. I think it's a solid movie. I think it is not an embarrassment to the annals of Best Picture, certainly. I think they've certainly been worse.
Yes.
But it'll be interesting, I think, to go and catch up with it now when we're so far post-hype. I think the one takeaway that I had from it, and especially now in the light of all this Ben Affleck as Batman thing, is that Argo and the success of Argo had this weird kind of sideways, backwards effect where, like, the more credit Ben Affleck got as a director, the more he seems to have gotten it into his head that he's a good actor, which is not the case. And I don't think was the case in Argo, and it wasn't the case in The Town. And it feels like the wrong lessons are being learned from this. And I get that it's about box office bankability. And all of a sudden, Affleck now is a name again that people associate with good things and success rather than awful things like paycheck.
Did you see Daredevil?
I did see Daredevil.
How was he in Daredevil?
He was not great in Daredevil. Okay. Nothing was great in Daredevil.
Yeah, how could he have been great in Daredevil?
Yeah.
But I think, guys,
I'm sort of possible. I'm slow to put that blame on him. Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, like, ultimately, this Batman versus Superman movie, nobody needs to be Olivier in this thing.
That was my next point. Yeah. I mean, how demanding is Batman when you just have to talk like this? Little winter sun, you know? Like,
right. Well, that's the thing, is I feel like I don't have any sort of protective instincts towards the Batman versus Superman movie. It kind of annoys me that Affleck's always been this weird lightning rod for me, and I get it. Like, I get that I care too much.
It's because he's
a force
of nature,
Joe. And I really, really
Joe.
Like, oh, God, he annoyed me back during the those mid-2000 Geely era Affleck days.
Yeah.
And his personality still kind of annoys me. But then he married Jennifer Garner, and I love her, and I thought she kind of made him more likable by proxy.
Yeah, she's his human credit, definitely.
But oh, I don't know. Okay, there's that scene in Argo where everybody has sort of laughed about it.
Go ahead, okay. Just joking.
It's good for a laugh, but that scene where he completely gratuitously, like, walks across the screen with no shirt on for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, he is the director. He did make an active decision to be like, that stays. That gets shot. That stays. For what reason? Nobody really knows. And
And yet, didn't. At the same time, he has that Cousin Oliver wig on the whole time.
Well,
like, why?
This is
I understand why, but why?
There was no pressing need for him to play the lead. And especially, I say this all the time, but if you look at the end credits of Argo, after it's over, they do those side by side shots with, like, here's Clea DuVall, here's the character that Clea DuVall played, here's Scoot McNairy, here's the character that Scoot McNairy plays. All of those resemblances, they show that because all the resemblances are so completely spot on. And then they get to Affleck, and it's like Ben Affleck and the real Tony Mendez, who looks like he would be named Tony Mendez.
Well, yeah, he justly got heat for, you know, whitewashing that character.
Right, and I just feel like ultimately that's the Ben Affleck that annoys me, and I feel like that's the Ben Affleck that we've gotten back now. And
yeah. But I'll say this for Argo, and it seems clear, like, obviously a movie about how great it is and heroic it can be to make a movie, even a fake one. Like, there was no way that wasn't going to win Best Picture. Like, it's the Zero Dark Thirty that everyone can feel good about it and have fun at. Like, it's the fun hostage movie. But I think I'm interested to see what people think when they watch it on the small screen, because I feel like shrunk down and put in a manageable size, it makes more sense. And if somehow you've managed to not see it, you can watch it on HBO this Saturday.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch. Like, absolutely.
Yeah. And then this full disclosure, friend of the show, John Ramos, produced a documentary called Terms and Conditions May Apply, which has already aired on TV on Pivot maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. The new cable network Pivot. But now, as of today, as of the day of this recording, which is Tuesday, September 3rd, you can rent it on iTunes and buy it, I assume, also. So it's available on demand, and everyone should check it out. It's a terrifying documentary about privacy, ? And how none of us has any online. And so it explores, you know, Facebook mostly, but all of that sort of business and how we're all fucked pretty much.
Yeah.
So maybe watch that first and then watch Argo to come down. That would be my recommendation.
And if you hang around deep in the credits, one Sarah D. Bunting will be buried.
Ooh,
as one
I
of
didn't
the terms
that.
And conditions. Yes,
that's
assistant,
so cool.
assistant to the production assistants.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I asked Margaret Atwood a few questions and it actually didn't go that well. And she's on screen for like 8 seconds, and I was like, worth it.
Amazing. That's cool. So yeah, both we recommend both of those those movies for you to watch at your home.
Hello, everybody. That means it's time for the canon, and I will be submitting your canon this week. A little change of pace this week. I just want to spoiler before we start. Spoilers aho, fun ahoy. Today I am talking about a British show, talking about UK imports, called Black Mirror. And I'm spoiling this, even though it's 3 years old or 2 years old now, because once you know the premise of the episode, the terror joy that you will experience watching the episode will be greatly diminished. So if you haven't seen Black Mirror, the first episode, it's called National Anthem. Skip ahead. It's coming to the U.S. apparently in November to a network yet unnamed.
Yes, but Charlie Brooker, the creative Black Mirror, tweeted last week that it's on its way to
yes.
North America.
So I implore you, if you think you might want to watch something that's very weird and unsettling, but will maybe give you a shit-eating grin, skip it. Come back to it in November after you've watched it. And for those that have seen it already, this is my canon submission. So what is Black Mirror? Briefly, it's an anthology. It's sort of about all the human-facing technology in the information age, kind of like Twilight Zone. And Black Mirror refers to TV screens, computer screens, that
smartphone
kind of stuff.
Screens.
Yeah, all that. And the first episode of the series is about television. Why is this episode canon-worthy? Because it is without a doubt the biggest what the fuck moments I've ever experienced on television. The premise is this: a royal princess is kidnapped and is videotaped giving the ransomer's demand. And this is the scene just after the Prime Minister of Great Britain watches that video.
She said pig. Sex with a pig.
They want me to have sex with a pig.
Live on television this afternoon.
But what? Who?
We're checking with our embedded operatives, compiling a list of suspects as we speak.
Meanwhile, the demand has been made, and there's not long to formulate our response.
Well, I'm not fucking a pig. Page one, that's not happening.
Of course.
So this episode has a lot to say about the state of news gathering, freedom of the press, viral information, and politics in the information age. But this is the canon-worthy kicker. The Prime Minister of Britain totally has sex with a pig.
As the YouTube comment says, PM gonna fuck a pig, LOL.
And there's a lot more to this episode, but ladies and gentlemen, I rest my canon case.
Shall I begin?
Sure.
So first, I need to give a shout out to Emily Yoshida and the rest of the crew at Grantland's Girls in Hoodies podcast, also Tess Lynch and Molly Lambert, because if not for them, I would not have even known that this show exists. They talked about it on their podcast.
Okay, I found this show.
No, you didn't. I told you about this show.
Oh.
Nice. Nice revisionist historian, Dave.
It's not the way I want to remember it.
I'm right, Dave is wrong. Anyway.
I acquiesce.
What amazes me about this is that two things. One, this is the pilot. This is a series premiere.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to just go for fucking broke. Because it's an anthology series, as Dave said, like The Twilight Zone. They could have shown the episodes in any order. But they decided to come out of the gate real strong with this one. And it's so deadpan. It takes the premise that is ridiculous extremely seriously, which makes it all the more absurd and crazy and nuts. And the fact that it goes all the way through to pay it off the way that the first scene promises, I think is super duper ballsy. As it were, the only part of the episode that doesn't work for me is in the middle when they're raiding the office park, because it takes a really long time for something that we know is not going to result in anything.
Right.
That part is a bit slow for me, but and then at the end, I was thinking when we rewatched it this weekend, part of me wishes that we could have seen more of the aftermath, like what follows, that's sort of just, you know, thrown away in the closing credits of the episode. Like they show you what happens a year later.
Yeah.
And then the final shot is the Prime Minister and his wife, after they've had a successful public outing, then they come home and he wants to talk to her and she is not having it, because once a pig fucker, always a pig fucker. But
that,
you gotta
that
stay
ending
married.
Did not. Yeah, that ending did not work for me either. It needed to either stop, like, when the door of 10 Downing slammed.
Yeah.
Or it needed to go on a little further, but there was something about him being like, please, and then she's just stalking upstairs that I was like, it just felt a little...
Did you have your volume up loud enough? Because you could hear him whisper, put on the pig costume.
Didn't work.
But yes, I love this episode, and it really made me excited to watch the rest of it. We've now seen the subsequent three episodes that follow this, but we're saving the last two episodes of series two.
The whole series is pretty strong. None are as, you know, what the fuck worthy as this episode, but the series is great. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I loved it. I was immediately saying holy shit out loud and did not stop the whole time. Yeah. I admire that they always went there, that I'm like, well, they're going to find a way to get out of, oh, he's fucking a pig.
Yep.
And He had to. He was still fucking the pig after like an hour.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The little throwaway comments, like when everyone's in the pub.
Yeah.
And it's just the shots of their faces, but then there's a throwaway shot of a chalkboard with odds on it. It's like 4-1 vomit, 2-1 cry, and it was. It's full of stuff like that. Like when that news producer is like taking selfies and sending them to the prime minister's office, and you don't really have to see the whole thing, and it's just very cleverly paced and. And edited, and of course, any televised or filmed entertainment that has the line "fucking internet" in it, I am on its side immediately and without much question. So, yeah, I adored it. Thank you for bringing this into my life, even though that was a guy fucking a pig. And then, and my brother Dave, past guest of the show, and I have an ongoing most realistic post-vomit loogie award list.
That's all right.
Barton Fink has been holding the pole position for many, many years. I think we might have a new king.
That was...
Congratulations, Rory Kinnear.
And you are welcome, listening audience. If you're not listening to this at lunchtime, I'm sorry. Joe Reed, please talk
now. Do you guys recognize who his female aide was?
Oh, Lindsay Duncan.
It took me a long time to figure out she was from Rome. Yeah, without her curly hair.
She's high up on my list of things to love about this episode. And I really only know her from Rome. And I have a feeling she's probably done a lot in Britain that I don't know of. And I know she's in a movie coming up that's in the New York Film Festival called Le Weekend. That her and Jim Broadman. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I want her on a television series right now. Like... I think she's fantastic. Anyway, it is the gravity of the way it's all performed that really sells it. The part at the very beginning after they talk about how the video's already gotten out there on YouTube, and the one sort of like old craggy aide just goes like, it's been tweeted 6,000 times. And it's just like, it's so incredibly, absolutely, completely serious, completely dire, completely grave, because it is, because like, but... It made me think about things like The Twilight Zone, which will take an absurd concept. And I mean, this is nothing against The Twilight Zone. Obviously, that's a fantastic show. But it's just sort of like you'll be in a universe and you'll be like, hamburgers for hands? What? Like, and this one, it's just like the absurdity is of the idea that there would be any kind of situation where you would end up seeing the Prime Minister of England fuck a pig. And so it's like, that's it. That's taken care of. All of a sudden, the world is completely off of its axis anyway. And so we can play it as straight as possible.
Yeah.
I think
even
that's why
there really is no earthly reason why this couldn't happen. And yet, like, it just seems like we're in like six dimensions, you know, away from where we are in the universe right now.
That's what makes
the
episode
like the canny valley.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
But that's what makes the episode so strong for me, is that it really builds a case where it's like, here are the things that you would do if you got this ransom demand. Of course, the first thing you would do is try to find the person. First take it down. Second, find the person. Third, figure out through technology some kind of way to fake it, despite the specific like technical demands that he had made that would make it impossible to fake it. And then even that might have worked if it hadn't been foiled by fucking Twitter. So it's like they just really like point by point establish how it gets to the end and everybody in Britain and watching the Prime Minister.
And to Joe's point, most of the other episodes of the series sort of take place in the near future, I think.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And this one doesn't. This one is today. And that's why I think it has more impact than the other ones beyond, of course, the pig fucking.
Yes.
There were a couple small things too that I love. Sarah was talking about all like the ancillary stuff. The people in the hospital, when they get into that little mini debate about the Dogma 95 requirements. And,
totally.
Like that was great. Also, that one guy is Branson from Downton Abbey, right?
Yes. Yeah. Lady Sybil they is later in the mentioned, second episode.
Yeah. And they later mentioned that the actor, I think, that they want to get in the faking footage is like, oh, it's done a couple episodes of Downton Abbey. And I was just like, oh, like, fun meta. Also, this is why you don't have a royal family. Because then you have to deal with protecting them and going to extreme measures to do so. Also, on the subject of his wife, and really, and the Prime Minister as well, think about how many wonderful things have now been taken away from them in terms of no more bacon, like, no more delicious pulled pork, like... Looney Tunes cartoons are completely out of the question. Like, maybe he was a big fan of watching Babe on DVD, like, once a year, and now that's gone.
Yeah, their baby will never see that movie.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot now that's been taken away from this family.
One more
and a
thing.
A nation, really.
Yeah. One more thing that before we go to a vote, I give it so much credit for having lots of news footage in the episode that actually looks like news footage. So yeah. Often, for some reason, this is something that they never get right, usually in movies, but it's just like the anchor is too stagey. Mm-hmm. They don't
or
read
too
flat.
Winky.
Or yeah, and whoever they got, she might be a real news anchor in Britain for all I know, mm-hmm. but she nailed it. And even the commentators that they had on to like give color, it all looked like
and
real.
The crawl,
yes,
and the way it was like so like bland and
yep.
superfluous. It was fantastic.
Can I bring up the all-time worst example of that? Is Chris Matthews in the Hardball episode of Dirty Rock, who was like, you
doing
have
his
your own
job.
Television show. Yeah. Just act like you normally act on your TV show, you
yes.
weirdo.
Yes. When Tucker Carlson is out acting you, you have a problem, yes. Chris Matthews.
Yeah.
Ugh. All right. So let's put this to a vote. Tara?
Yes.
Sarah?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Black Mirror, Series 1, Episode 1, The National Anthem. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week, and Sarah has our winner.
Actually, I think we're all winners because I found out that Nickelodeon/TV oral history fans can look forward to the oral history of the Nickelodeon Golden Age, which allegedly is the 90s. But anyway, it's called Slimed, an oral history of Nickelodeon's Golden Age, and it's set to drop September 24th. I love oral histories. I love TV gossip. I cannot wait. And here's what really sold me on it, even though this is not the 90s, as far as I know. I was reading the piece about it in LA Weekly, and there was a quote from one Kevin Kubicheski from You Can't Do That on Television, and I was like, that's more 79 than 90s, but I don't care, because I love that show, and I had a giant crush on Kevin Kubicheski. Now the truth may be known. And that's my winner, so look forward to that book, and then let's hope we can do an extra hot great book club about it. He was just one of the kids who was like, he was that Hesher-looking kid who was always in the lockers on You Can't Do That on Television.
I was really hoping it was going to be the...
Coob?
The disgusting chef.
Oh.
I really had a crush on that guy.
Barth.
I know I like a redhead, but even I can draw the line somewhere, and that's where.
I know how you like some sloppy. That's all you're scaring us, mister.
I heard that. Oh my god, I can't believe I just pulled that out. Wow. Anyway, speaking of losers.
Losers Tara. Of the week is also all of us somehow. Because Joanna Scanlon, who plays Terry on The Thick of It, gave an interview this week where she said that probably Peter Capaldi getting cast as Doctor Who means that there will be no more The Thick of It.
Aww.
Which is heartbreaking. I still feel like there could be a way to pull it off, but I wonder if it's something where it's like, if kids know Malcolm, if kids know Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, he can't play that role anymore because it's so profane that it would upset kids.
I don't buy that.
Well, whatever. I hope they can figure it out.
Well, think of this. At the end of The Thick of It, the last series they did, Malcolm is, disgraced.
Yeah.
And out of politics. So, if he has to have a 5-year fallow period, that would play into a revival, where he's sat low and now he's back in politics. So
okay,
it would work.
Good point.
Yeah. So there you go. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and failing that, they could always figure out a way to get him on Veep.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would work too. In the interim. Mm-hmm. Guys, you know what time it is?
Get to
it.
All right, this is the third game time of the season. Joe has won every single game time we have played on this show.
Right,
so he has 2 points. And everybody else has 0 points. This week, we are playing In Living Color from Alyssa and Lauren, who earned themselves an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot great mini of their choosing. Thanks again to everybody who helped fill out the question list on EHG Assist on Twitter. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. In this game, I will read you the name of an actor, and you're going to tell me the TV show they were in that has a color in the title of the show. 2 points for the right answer, but you may ask for a clue in the form of the year the show started. After that, the right answer is worth 1 point. We've got 39 shows. I like to remind people that the questions are in no particular order, have been randomized, and each week the player who goes first is randomly chosen by our very annoying computer system, Picky 3000. That's the person in control choosing initiative. This week it is Joe going first. Are you ready to play in Living Color?
Yes. I am.
Okay, Joe.
Green yes. light, get it?
Your actor is Theo James, and we're looking for the TV show with a color in the title. You may ask for a clue in which I will tell you the year the show started. The gotcha. Actor again, Theo James.
Theo James, the illustrious Mr. Pamuk from Downton Abbey.
Pamuk?
Oh, what was that show? All right. Golden Boy?
Correct okay. for 2 points. Right. We'll move on to Sarah. The actor, Candace Bergen.
Ooh, the actor, Candace Bergen. Oh, Murphy Brown.
Correct. Tara.
Yep.
Your actor, Ken Howard.
The White Shadow.
Wow, nice pull.
Dang.
Back to Joe. Tom Weston Jones.
I don't know who that is. And a year probably. Well, I mean, what? All right, hint.
The show started very recently in 2012.
Was he on Orphan Black?
Oh, good guess.
The good guess. Coppa.
Oh.
Damn you, Crayola box.
Okay, Sarah. Your yes. actor is Megan Follows.
Megan Follows. Hint, please.
This show started in 1985.
1985?
I can tell you this much. I bet Tara knows.
Correct, I do.
Yeah.
I bet she does. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to hearing her answer for me, because I do not know.
Tara?
Is it Anne of Green Gables?
It is Anne of Green Gables. All right, Joe.
Wait, yeah.
No,
me.
Tara.
Me.
Sorry. Daniel J. Travanti.
Hill Street Blues.
Correct for 2 points. Joe.
Yes.
Jeff Foxworthy.
Well, there was a Jeff Foxworthy show. There was Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? None of those are colors.
Aren't they?
Gray is. That's part of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
I wonder if... Oh.
No,
see,
that's not
something
it.
Something about red states? I don't know.
Blue Collar TV?
Blue Collar TV is correct.
Yeah. I was going to say, Are You Smarter Than a Redneck? Which is totally not a show.
Sarah.
Yes.
My favorite entry of this game. Uh-oh. Dick Butkus.
Dick Butkus.
Dick Butkus.
Can I have a hint, please?
Yeah, this TV show started in way back in 1984.
1984. Crap. When you say it, I'm going to be really mad, but I don't know.
Anybody know this one?
No.
Dave Cole would know it. Blue Thunder with Bubba Smith.
Ew.
Never heard of it.
You don't know Blue Thunder?
Are you joking?
I've never heard of it.
What is it?
All right, we're going to pause this podcast. We're going to go watch Blue Thunder, the movie and the TV show. Blue Thunder is the precursor to Airwolf. It's all about Blue Thunder and helicopter.
Excuse me.
I'll watch the British version.
All right.
Cerulean Thunder.
Sorry, this is to Tara, right?
Yes.
John Ritter.
I am thinking...
What TV show did he star in that had a color in the title?
Well, it's not Three's Company.
That's true.
It's not Hooperman.
No.
10 Speed and Brown Shoe? I don't know.
Wow.
Clifford, nice. The Big Red Dog.
Wow.
Fucking Clifford.
Back to Joe.
Yes.
Yes.
Your actor is Method Man.
Okay. Method Man. Oh. Is that a TV show? Method and Red Man?
Method and Red.
Method and Red. God damn it.
Close.
Very close.
Sarah, your yes. actor is Jeff Garlin.
Jeff Garlin. Oh, crap. May I have a hint, please?
Yes, this show starts 2013.
Ugh, I'm not going to know that.
Anybody know this one?
The Goldbergs.
The Goldbergs. Yeah.
Yeah, the Goldbergs. Okay, to Tara.
Yes.
Your actor, Brian Posehn. Brian Posehn.
It's not Mr. Show. It's not Just Shoot Me.
By the way, I started listening to Brian Posehn's Dungeons & Dragons podcast, where he just plays with his friends, including Blaine Kaplatch. It's surprisingly entertaining.
Uh-huh. Kaplatch, not Kriplatch.
Kriplatch.
That's the noise
sound he makes when he falls off the cliff.
Kriplatch.
I don't have an answer for Brian Posehn.
Do you want the hint, or are you just...
Oh, yeah, sure. I forgot about hints.
2007.
Is when it started.
That's correct.
No, I still don't know.
The Sarah Silverman Show.
The
Sarah Silverman Show.
Right.
And now it's time for a score break. Tara, can we have the scores?
Joe has 2.
Yep.
Sarah has 2. I have 4.
2-2-4. And this is to Joe, and I think this is going to work out for Joe. Or at least he's going to appreciate it.
Okay.
Your actor, and that was in quotes, is Dionne Warwick.
Nice.
Dionne Warwick.
Picky put his thumb on the scale for this one, I would say.
I like to remind everybody, these questions are randomized, as is the order we play in.
Wait, but what television show was Dionne Warwick?
But what television show was she in? And what color was in the title?
Solid gold?
Nice!
Wow.
For Sarah, Dennis yes. Franz.
Dennis Franz. NYPD Blue.
He was also on Hill Street Blues.
That's right.
Can and I Bay just City say, Blues. I'm completely furious with myself for not bringing up I Got Your Number, Hussy, when I got a Dionne Warwick clue. Like, I don't know who I am anymore. I'm sorry.
Get out.
Tara.
Yes.
Whitney Houston.
Whitney Houston.
Tools at your...
Being Bobby Brown.
Nice.
Ouch.
I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name here for Joe, but Ellen Pompeo?
Pompeo.
Pompeo?
Ellen Pompeo. Grey's Anatomy.
Correct. Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
Sweet. For Sarah. James Spader.
James Spader.
Mm-hmm.
James Spader. James Spader. James Spader. I would like a hint, please.
This show starts 2013.
Damn it. I know. I've seen the teaser. So I'm going to watch it.
Probably seen him on a bus.
In this show, James Spader plays the logo from the Neighborhood Watch Association.
That's true, he does.
Oh, my God. It's going to be something red. I don't know. Crimson Knife.
The Blacklist.
Damn it. Sorry, James Spader.
Tara.
He's fine. Yes?
Rhoda Mitchell. Rhoda.
Red Widow.
Once again, because I think I talked over you.
Red Widow.
Red Widow is correct for 2 points. Joe.
Yes.
Rowan Atkinson.
Blackadder.
Correct for 2 points. Sarah. Sybil Shepherd.
Sybil Shepherd. Well, it's not Sybil. It's not Moonlighting. What was the other one? Hint?
This show started 1983.
83?
Yeah. Good luck.
Oh. Yeah. I don't know.
The Yellow Rose, which was the name of a restaurant or something of some sort of, it was the name of some
or
sort of establishment.
Alleged TV
in Texas.
Show that the submitters made up. Yeah. That never existed.
Tatara.
Yes. Just to make sure we weren't cheating.
Yes.
Your actor, Vicky Gunvalson.
The Real Housewives of Orange County.
Correct for 2 points. Back to Joe. Trevor Moore. Trevor Moore.
All the air just went out of Joe.
Hint, please.
2007, this show started, and it has a color in the title.
Trevor Moore. 2007. 2007. What were those shows? Da 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 da.
A young Joe Reed had just moved to New York City.
I was going to say, I just moved to New York. Those were all the shows that, like, got interrupted by the strike.
Right. Why, I'm going to get Krispy Kreme every day.
Oh, God, I'm going to miss it. I'm going to be mad. I don't know.
The Whitest Kids You Know. The
There's no way I would have gotten that. Okay.
Yikes. All right. From Joe to Sarah. Mm-hmm. I think Sarah... I would say this is a tough one, but there's an outside chance you might get this. Just because of who you are. Okay. Your actor is Robert Conrad.
Yes.
Robert Conrad. No, nothing?
Wait, I would like a hint. I don't know why.
1976, and I'll give you a bonus hint. Two possible answers, same show.
two possible answers, same show, mid-70s.
Yeah.
Redley's Greengels?
The original title of this show is called Ba Ba Black Sheep and renamed for syndication to Black Sheep Squadron, a show I watched every day after school for a while in syndication.
Black Sheep Squadron. That
it's
fantastic.
A World War II South Pacific like aeroplane fighter show.
Amazing.
What would make you think Sarah would know that?
Sarah likes old dudes.
All
right, fair.
And, Sarah is her own grandfather in her tastes. That is true. And yet, Sarah also always loses game time. Which one will happen? That second one. Moving on.
Yeah.
Your actor, Matt Bomer.
White collar.
All right. And we are 2/3 the way through, pretty much. So let's get a score break.
Sarah has 4.
Yep.
Joe has 8. I have 12.
All right. Still anybody's game. Lots of points still available.
Well, not anybody's.
Joe.
Yes.
Your actor, Stephen Collins.
Stephen Collins.
Readers of the site will know this one. All right, sorry.
Quiet, you.
Okay.
Well, okay. Seventh Heaven is a no-go. Is he on something now?
Is he? You could find out with a hint.
And could. Okay, hint.
1982.
No, not now. Okay. Oof, Lord.
As it were.
Yeah, I don't know. Yellow Rose Returns.
Right color. Tales of the Gold Monkey. Tales of the Gold Monkey.
Oh, doy.
All right, Sarah.
Yes.
Your actor is Chris Berry.
Chris Berry?
Yeah, that's I-E.
Okay, that helps not at all. May I have a hint?
1988.
1988?
This is a tough one. No shame in not getting this one.
It's a tough game overall.
And this guy's pretty young when you start in this, so you probably don't know.
Indigo Knights.
Red Dwarf. All right. This is also a tough one for Tara.
Yeah.
Your actor, Rich Little.
I have no idea, and telling me the year will not help.
Anybody want to take a guess? It's
the
voice
Dean
work.
Martin Celebrity Green. I don't know.
The Pink Panther Show.
All right.
Joe.
Yes.
Steve Burns.
Blue's Clues.
Hey.
Nice.
All right. Sarah.
Yep.
Tatiana Maslany.
Orphan Black.
Correct for 2 points. Tara.
Yes.
Ricky Schroeder.
Silver Spoons.
Correct. Joe.
Yes.
Maurice LaMarche.
Maurice LaMarche is a voice actor.
Oh, look at him. He's talking it through.
Yeah.
I guess this point, it's going to be a good one. Don't forget, you can ask for the year.
Oh, yeah. What is the year?
1995.
Mid-90s. Okay. 95. He was on The Critic right around there. 95.
He's got animated. A color in the title.
Got a color in the title. I don't know.
Pink, Key, and the Brain.
Brain. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Sarah.
Yes.
Dylan McDermott. Your actor Dylan is Dylan McDermott.
Dermott. Dylan McDermott. Dylan McDermott. Well, it's not The Practice. And it's not American Horror Story. And I know. Oh my God, I'm going to be so angry. I'm going to be so angry with myself.
I don't think so.
I would like a year, please.
2009.
Ugh, I don't know.
It's one of those TNT shows that I don't know about.
I think it is. Dark Blue.
Oh, yeah. That was TNT.
Tara?
Yeah.
Your actor. Arnold the Pig.
Green Acres.
Joe, your actor.
He did air quotes. I saw them.
Okay.
David Duchovny. One of history's great acting robots, David Duchovny.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, not at X-Files, not Californication. Year, please.
1992.
Not Twin Peaks.
92.
Oh, I always forget he was on that.
Yeah. I don't know.
1990 Shoe. Red Shoe Diaries.
Oh, right.
I was like, if this is Larry Sanders and they say sand is a color, I'm fucking quitting.
Okay, Sarah.
Yes.
Your actor.
Air quotes.
Jeff Altman.
Jeff Altman.
Yep.
Jeff Oldman. Year, please.
1980.
Oh.
I don't know.
Pink Lady and Jeff?
Correct for Tara. No points
no
awarded.
No points.
Pink Lady, a.k.a. Pink Lady and Jeff. Yes. Okay, so this is to Tara.
Yep.
Tom Selleck.
Blue Blood.
Oh, did you answer?
Yes.
What was it?
Blue Bloods. Jesus. Stop being delighted by your own antics and keep up.
All right. Everybody has one question left. Let's go to score break.
Sarah has six. Joe has 10. I have 18.
Oh, okay. Well, I think we know who won, but let's finish the game.
Why don't we let me answer all the questions that are left?
Joe.
Yes.
Your actor, Bruce Lee.
Uh-huh. Oh, no. The Green Hornet.
Correct.
Nice.
2 points.
Okay.
Sarah, your last question. Mm-hmm. Ben Vereen.
Ben Vereen.
And I will say, the name of the show has been mentioned during this game time.
Really?
It's not going to help. Year, please.
1980. By the way, going back a little bit, well, Sarah thinks about that. Apparently, Pink Lady and Jeff was voted one of the worst TV shows of all time.
Yes.
It's a variety show.
It's always on the list.
Yeah.
Ben
Vereen, 1980. Ben?
Pink Lady and Roots. the less popular spinoff series.
Black Knot Lady and Jeff. No.
Tara?
Is it 10 Speed and Brown Shoe?
It is 10 Speed and Brown Shoe.
Give that point to Tara.
An easy one to round it out for Tara. Taylor Schilling.
Oh, Orange is the New Black.
Correct. And do you want to hear the tiebreaker?
Sure.
For shits and giggles?
Yes.
And shout it out if you know it. The actor who stars in this show with a color and a name is, ready? Don Cheadle. Don Cheadle.
White Lies?
Golden Palace.
Golden Palace.
Oh, Golden Palace.
The Golden
God,
Palace.
That keeps coming up like a bad penny, the show.
Tara.
Me.
Yay. All right, guys, that's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We hop the pond for a look at Britain's best telly, and stateside, we discuss movies on TV where you can go lose all your privacy. Dave successfully pitched the What the Fuck Tacular premiere episode of Black Mirror for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Previously TV under the EHG hashtag, and on our site at previously.tv, where you can learn about submitting your own canons, game times, crackpots, and more. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano, Joe Reed.
That's Number Wang.
And Sarah D. Bunting.
Pip, pip, cheerio.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
It's trending on Twitter. Oh, fucking internet.